Chapter 58. She dreamed that she was being chased by an enormous white wolf, its fangs bared and its eyes flashing beneath a full moon. She was running through crops thick with mud that sucked at her toes, her breath forming clouds of steam. Her throat stung. Her legs burned. She ran as fast as she could, but her body became heavier with every step. The shriveled leaves of sugar beets turned rotten and brittle under her. She spotted a house in the distance. Her house. The farmhouse her grandmother had raised her in. The windows beaming with warmth. The house was safety. The house was home. But it receded into the distance with each painful step. The air around her became thick with fog, and the house disappeared altogether, swallowed whole by the encroaching shadows. She tripped, landing on her hands and knees. She rolled over, scrambling and kicking at the ground. Mud clung to her clothes and hair. The coldness from the ground soaked into her bones. The wolf prowled closer. Its lean muscles moved gracefully under the coat of fur. It snarled, eyes lit with hunger. Her fingers fished around on the ground, searching for a weapon, anything. They struck something smooth and hard. She grasped it and pulled it from the squelching mud. An axe, its sharp blade glistening with moonlight. The wolf leaped, gaping jaws unhinged. Scarlet lifted the axe, bracing herself, swung. The blade cut clean through the beast, cutting it into two pieces from head to tail. Warm blood spattered over Scarlet's face as the two wolf halves landed on either side of her. Her stomach roiled. She was going to throw up. She dropped the axe and collapsed back on the ground. The mud squished around her ears. Overhead, the moon filled up the whole sky. Then, the wolf halves began to rustle. They gradually rose up, now only the soft outer pelt of the beast, shorn in two. Scarlet could make out vague human-like shapes standing over her, each wearing half of the snow-white pelt. The fog cleared and Wolf and her grand-mère were before her, holding their arms out, welcoming her home. Scarlet gasped, her eyes flew open. She was met with the sight of steel bars, the earthy smell of ferns and moss, and the clatter of 1,000 birds, some trapped in their own elaborate cages, others flocked in the tree branches that entwined around the enormous beams supporting the glass ceiling. A wolf yipped, sounding both sorrowful and concerned. Scarlet forced herself onto an elbow so she could see the barred enclosure on the other side of the pathway. The white wolf was sitting there watching her. He howled, just a short, curious sound, not the haunting howls that Scarlet heard in her dreams. She imagined he was asking if she was all right. She might have been screaming or thrashing during the nightmare, and the wolf's pale yellow eyes blinked with worry. Scarlet tried to gulp, but her mouth was parched, her saliva too thick. She must be going crazy to be carrying on silent conversations with wolves.
"He likes you."
Gasping, Scarlet flipped onto her back. A stranger, a girl, was sitting cross-legged in her cage, so close Scarlet could have touched her. Scarlet tried to push herself away, but the action sent pain rippling through her bandaged hand. She hissed and fell back onto the ground. Her hand was the worst of it. The hatchet had taken her left pinky finger to the second knuckle. She had not passed out, though she wished she would have. A lunar doctor had been waiting to bandage the wound, and had done it with such precision, Scarlet suspected it was a very common procedure. But then, there were also the scratches on her face and stomach from her time spent in the company of Master Charlson, and countless aches from sleeping on hard floors for, well, she'd lost count of how many nights. The girl's only reaction to Scarlet's grimace was a long, slow blink. Clearly, the girl was not another prisoner, or pet, as the extravagantly dressed lunars called Scarlet when they passed by her cage, giggling and pointing and making loud remarks on whether or not it was safe to feed the animals. The girl's clothing was the first indication of her status. A gauzy, silver-white dress that had settled around her shoulders and thighs like snowflakes might settle on a sleepy hillside. Her warm brown skin was flawless and healthy, her fingernails perfectly shaped and clean. Her eyes were bright, the color of melted caramel, but with hints of slate gray around her pupils. On top of all that, she had silky black hair that curled into perfect spirals, neatly framing her high cheekbones and ruby red lips. She was the most beautiful human being Scarlett had ever seen. Yet, there was one anomaly. Or three. The right side of the girl's face was marred by three scars that cut down her cheek from the corner of her eye to her jaw, like perpetual tears. Strangely, the flaws on her skin didn't reduce her beauty, but almost accentuated it. Almost compelled a person to stare at her longer, unable to peel their eyes away. It was with this thought that Scarlett realized it was a glamour, which meant this was another trick. Her expression changed from awestruck and blushing, she despised that she was actually blushing, to resentful. The girl blinked again, drawing attention to her impossibly long, impossibly thick eyelashes.
"Ryu and I are confused," she said. "Was it a very bad dream or a very good one?"
Scarlett scowled. The dream had already begun to wisp away, as dreams do, but the question reignited the memory of Wolf and her grandmother before her, alive and safe. Which was a cruel joke. Her grandmother was dead, and last she'd seen Wolf, he'd been under the control of a thaumaturge.
"Who are you? And who's Ryu?"
The girl smiled. It was both warm and conspiratorial, and it made Scarlett shiver. Stupid lunars and their stupid glamours.
"Ryu is the wolf, silly. You've been neighbors for 4 days now, you know. I'm surprised he hasn't officially introduced himself."
Then she leaned forward, dropping her voice to a whisper as if she were about to share a closely guarded secret.
"As for me, I am your new best friend, but don't tell anyone, because they all think that I'm your master now and that you are my pet. They don't know that my pets are really my dearest friends. We shall fool them all, you and I."
Scarlett squinted at her. She recognized the girl's voice now, the way she danced through her sentences like each word had to be coaxed off her tongue. This was the girl who had spoken during Scarlett's interrogation. The girl reached for a strand of filthy hair that had fallen across Scarlett's cheek. Scarlett tensed.
"Your hair is like burning. Does it smell like smoke?"
Bending over, the girl pressed the hair against her nose and inhaled.
"Not at all. That's good. I wouldn't want you to catch fire."
The girl sat up just as suddenly, pulling a basket toward her that Scarlett hadn't noticed before. It looked like a picnic basket, lined with the same silvery material as her dress.
"I thought today we could play doctor and patient. You'll be the patient."
She removed a device from the basket and pressed it against Scarlett's forehead. It beeped, and she checked the small screen.
"You're not running a fever. Here, let me check your tonsils."
She held a thin piece of plastic toward Scarlett's mouth. Scarlett knocked her away with her uninjured hand and forced herself to sit up.
"You're not a doctor."
"No, that's why it's pretend. Aren't you having fun?"
"Fun? I've been mentally and physically tortured for days. I'm starving. I'm thirsty. I'm being kept in a cage in a zoo.
Menagerie.
And I hurt in places that I didn't know my body even had. And now some crazy person comes in here and is trying to act like we're good pals, playing a raucous game of make-believe? Well, no, sorry, I'm not having any fun, and I'm not buying whatever chummy trick you're trying to play on me."
The girl's big eyes were blank, neither surprised nor offended by Scarlett's outburst. But then she glanced out towards the pathway that wound between the cages, overgrown with exotic flowers and trees to suggest some semblance of being in a lush jungle. A guard was standing at the pathway's bend, scowling. Scarlett recognized him. He was one of the guards that regularly brought her bread and water. He was the one who had grabbed her rear end the first time she'd been thrown into this cage. At the time, she'd been too exhausted to do anything more than stumble away from him. But if she ever had the chance, she would break every one of his fingers in retaliation.
"We're all right," the girl said, smiling brightly. "We're pretending that I cut off her hair and glued it to my head because I wanted to be a candlestick, and she didn't like that."
While she spoke, the guard's glare never left Scarlet, only narrowed in warning. After a long moment, he meandered away. When his footsteps had faded, the girl pulled the basket onto her lap and rifled through it.
"You shouldn't call me crazy. They don't like that."
Scarlet faced her again, her gaze dragging down the raised scar tissue on her cheek.
"But you are crazy."
"I know."
She lifted a small box from the basket.
"Do you know how I know?"
Scarlet didn't answer.
"Because the palace walls have been bleeding for years, and no one else sees it."
She shrugged, as if this were a perfectly normal thing to say.
"No one believes me, but in some corridors, the blood has gotten so thick, there's nowhere safe to step. When I have to pass through those places, I leave a trail of bloody footprints for the rest of the day, and then I worry that the queen's soldiers will follow the scent and eat me up while I'm sleeping. Some nights I don't sleep very well."
Her voice dropped to a haunted whisper, her eyes taking on a brittle luminescence.
"But if the blood was real, the servants would clean it up, don't you think?"
Scarlet shivered. This girl really was crazy.
"This is for you," she said,
astoundingly bright once again.
"Doctor's orders are to take one pill twice a day."
She tilted toward Scarlet.
"They wouldn't let me bring you real medication, of course, so it's just candy."
Then she winked, and Scarlet couldn't tell if the wink was to indicate that the box contained candy or not.
"I'm not going to eat it."
The girl listed her head.
"Why not? It's a gift to cement our forever friendship."
She pulled the lid off the box, revealing four small candies nestled in a bed of spun sugar. They were round as marbles and bright glossy red.
"Sour apple petites, my personal favorites. Please take one."
"What do you want from me?"
Her lashes fluttered.
"I want us to be friends."
"And all your friendships are based on lies? Wait, of course they are. You're lunar."
For the first time, the girl deflated a little.
"I've only ever had two friends,"
she said, then glanced quickly at the wolf. Ryu had lain down, resting his head on his paws as he watched them.
"Other than the animals, of course. But one of my friends turned into ashes when we were very little. A pile of girl-shaped ashes. The other has gone missing, and I don't know if he'll ever come back."
A shudder ripped through her, so strong she nearly dropped the box. With goosebumps all around her arms, she set the box on the floor between them and picked mindlessly at her dress.
"But I asked the stars to send a sign that he was all right, and they sent me a shooting star across the sky. The next day was a trial like any trial, except the earthen girl standing before me had hair like a shooting star, and you'd seen him."
"Do you ever make sense?"
The girl pressed her hands onto the ground and leaned forward until her nose was almost touching Scarlet's. Scarlet refused to pull away, though her brain hitched.
"Was he all right? When you saw him last, Sybil said he was still alive, that he may have been used to pilot that ship, but she didn't say if he'd been injured. Do you think he's safe?"
"I don't know what you're..."
The girl pressed her fingertips against Scarlet's mouth.
"Jason Clay,"
she whispered.
"Sybil's guard, with the blonde hair and beautiful eyes and the rising sun in his smile. Please, tell me he's all right."
Scarlet blinked. The girl's fingers were still in her mouth, but it didn't matter. She was too baffled to speak. The battle aboard the Rampion was mostly a blur of screaming and gunshots in her memory, and her focus had been on the thaumaturge then. but she did vaguely recall another person there, a blonde-haired guard. But the rising sun and his smile? Please. She sneered.
I remember two people trying to kill me, and my friends.
Yes, and Jason was one of them, she said,
evidently unconcerned with the whole killing part of Scarlet's statement.
I guess so. There was a blonde guard.
Glee spread over the girl's face. The look had the power to stop hearts and brighten rooms, but not to Scarlet.
And how did he look?
He looked like he was trying to kill me, but I'm sure my friends killed him first. That's usually what we do to people who work for your queen.
The smile vanished and the girl shriveled away, tying her arms around her waist.
You don't mean that.
I do, and believe me, he deserved it.
The girl was beginning to shake now, like she was on the verge of hyperventilating. Scarlet decided without much guilt that if that happened, she wouldn't do a thing about it. She wouldn't try to help her. She wouldn't call for the guard. This stranger was no friend. Across the aisle, the wolf had climbed onto all fours and was pawing at the base of his enclosure. He began to whimper. After a few moments, the girl managed to get herself under control. Sliding the lid back onto the candies, she settled them into her basket and stood, hunching in the small cage.
I see,
she said.
That will conclude this visit. I prescribe adequate rest and...
She sobbed and turned away, but paused before she could call for the guard. Slowly, stiffly, she turned back.
I wasn't lying about the walls that bleed. Someday soon, I fear the palace will be soaked through with blood, and all of Artemisia Lake will be so red, even the earthens will be able to see it.
I'm not interested in your delusions. A sharp, unexpected pain shot up through the arm that Scarlet was using to support herself,
and she crumpled to the ground, waiting for the pinpricks of pain to fade. She glared up at the girl, angry at how weak and vulnerable she was. Angry at the flash of a concern in the girl's eyes that seemed so honest. She snarled up at her.
And I don't care for your mock sympathy either. Your glamour, your mind control. You people have built your entire culture on lies, and I want nothing to do with it.
The girl stared at her for so long, Scarlet began to wish she hadn't said anything. But keeping her mouth shut had never been a great talent of hers. Then, finally, the girl tapped her knuckles against the bars. As the guard's footsteps padded down the pathway, she reached into the basket and retrieved the box again. She set it down at Scarlet's side, tucking it beside her so the guard wouldn't see.
I haven't used my glamour since I was 12 years old,
she whispered, gaze piercing, as if it were very important to her that Scarlet understand this.
Not since I was old enough to control it. That's why the visions come to me. That's why I'm going mad.
Behind her, the bolts of the cage door clunked open.
Your Highness.
She swiveled on her toes and ducked out of the cage, her head lowered so that her thick hair hid both her beauty and her scars.
Your Highness.
Stunned, Scarlet lay on the ground until her tongue began to turn to chalk from thirst. As far as she knew, there was only one lunar princess. Other than Cinder, of course.
Princess Winter, the queen's stepdaughter. The unspeakable beauty. The scars that, according to rumor, had been inflicted by the queen herself.
When she glanced back toward the wolf's cage, Ryu had wandered away toward the back of his enclosure. He had been given much more space to prowl than Scarlet. Perhaps a quarter of an acre of dirt and grass, trees, and a fake fallen log that formed a quaint little den. Sighing, Scarlet looked back up at the glass ceiling, where she could see black sky and countless stars between the tree branches. Her stomach panged, a reminder that her one small meal had been devoured hours ago, and, unlike Ryu and the white stag that had lived in an enclosure farther down the aisle, and the albino peacock that sometimes wandered freely between them, Scarlet wouldn't get another meal until tomorrow. It took a long time of battling her weakened willpower, feeling the weight of the candies beside her. She had no reason to trust that girl. She didn't trust that girl. But after her stomach had begun to ache from hollowness and her head to spin with hunger, she gave up and pulled the lid off the box. She pulled out one of the candies. It was glass smooth beneath her teeth. The outer shell cracked easily, giving way to a warm, melty center that burst sweet and sour on her tongue. She moaned and let her head fall onto the hard floor. Nothing, not even her grandmother's prized tomatoes, had ever tasted so good. But then, as she was working her tongue around her gums, searching out any missed bits of the candy, a tingling began to warm her throat. It expanded outward, into her chest, and through her abdomen and along her limbs, all the way to her missing finger, leaving a trail of comfort in its wake. When it was gone, Scarlet realized that it had taken her pain with it. Chapter 59. It was like being drawn slowly from the serene darkness. The way one wakes up when they've been having a lovely dream and their subconscious is struggling to hold them there, just a little while longer. Then, with angry resignation, Kai was awake, his eyes wide open and staring up at unfamiliar slats, the underside of a bunk bed. He rubbed his eyes, thinking maybe he hadn't awoken entirely yet. His chest was throbbing and there was a nauseous twist in his stomach. He turned his head to the side and felt an ache in his neck. Reaching up, he discovered a bandage taped beneath his hairline. But his attention was already moving on, wandering around the room. There was a tiny desk and a utilitarian closet on the other side. Though the room was so small, he almost could have touched them from where he lay. A dim light had been left on beside the door. The walls were metal, and the slightly scratchy blanket he lay on was military brown. Pulse speeding up, he reached for the bunk overhead to keep himself from hitting his head as he swung his legs over the side. His feet landed on the uncarpeted floor with a thunk, and he was surprised to discover he was wearing shoes. Dress shoes, and dress slacks, and his wedding shirt and sash, now wrinkled and untucked. Great stars, the wedding. Mouth suddenly dry, Kai lurched out of the bed and stumbled toward the small window. He pressed his hands to either side. His stomach dropped in unison with his jaw. Great stars indeed. He'd never seen so many in all his life, and never so bright. It gave him a strange sensation of vertigo, like he should have been looking up into the night sky, but the gravity was all wrong. Where was the horizon to orient himself? A cold sweat beaded on his forehead as he pressed his cheek to the wall, trying to peer as far down as the small window would let him. And then, Earth. Kai shoved himself away from the wall. He nearly fell over but caught himself on the upper mattress of the bunk. His heartbeat clanked and shuddered. Mysteries began to click together in his muddled brain. Cinder, a knife, the bandages on his wrist and neck, his tracking chips. Wasn't the chip in his neck supposed to be top secret? And a gun or something embedded in her hand, the lingering sting beside his sternum. Had she shot him? Raking a hand through his hair, he turned and wrenched open the door. He found himself in a narrow hallway, more brightly lit than the room had been. At the far end of it opened up into a kitchen of sorts. He could hear voices coming from the other direction. Pulling his shoulders back, he marched toward them. The hall opened into a huge metal room cluttered with plastic storage crates. Through a doorway, he saw the lights and instruments of a cockpit, and another breathtaking view of Earth. Two people were seated in the cockpit chairs as he approached. "Where's Cinder?" They spun to face him, and the girl launched herself to her feet.
"Your Majesty!"
The man, a huge grin spreading over his face, was slower to stand, first grabbing a cane from against the wall.
"Welcome aboard the Rampion, your majesticness. Captain Carswell Thorne, at your service." He bowed.
Kai scowled.
Yeah, I recognize you. You do? The man's smile grew wider, and he nudged the girl with his elbow. He recognizes me.
Where's Cinder?
The girl swayed nervously on her heels.
I believe she's in the podship dock, Your Majesty.
Kai turned and marched out toward the cargo bay and yelped. Another man was sitting cross-legged on top of a packing crate, shirtless, with a needle in one hand, a thread in his mouth, and a pile of bloodied bandages beside him. His torso was marred by numerous wounds and scars, both old and new. He had a black tattoo stamped on his left arm. Pulling the needle through a gash on his chest, he let the thread drop from his mouth and nodded.
Your Majesty.
Choking on his heart, Kai found himself anchored to the floor, expecting the man to leap at him and maul him to death at any moment. He hadn't yet seen one of the Queen's wolf soldiers in person, but he'd seen plenty of vids. He knew how fast they were, how deadly. But after an awkward, silent moment, the man simply returned his attention to his wound.
Your Majesty?
Starting, he whipped his gaze back to the blonde girl.
Would you like me to take you to the podship dock?
He forced his hands to unclench, reminding himself that he was the ruler of the Eastern Commonwealth and would behave accordingly, even among criminals and monsters.
Thank you, he gasped. That would be appreciated.
Cinder chewed on her lower lip while she twisted the wires together, fastening them with a wire connector.
All right, try that.
Aiko, flat on her back, cast her gaze downward, then tilted her head to the left. Her eyes brightened, and she tried to the right, daring to test the full range of motion. She beamed.
It works!
Cinder tapped her chin with the end of the fuse pullers. There's still a little bit of a bend in that third vertebrae, but there's nothing I can do about it now. We'll just have to wait until we can find a replacement piece. Try your fingers again. Aiko wiggled her fingers, then her toes. She lifted her legs until they were perpendicular to the floor, then kept going so that she was practically kissing her knees. Letting out a yelp of delight, she flipped forward, using the momentum to spring up onto her feet.
It works! It all works!
Aiko, knock it off! Cinder scrambled up beside her. I still need to... Before she could finish, Aiko pulled her against her bosom, squeezing and swaying and trembling with joy. An android. Trembling with joy.
You're the best mechanic an android could ever ask for.
Say that again when you don't have an enormous gaping hole in your throat, Cinder said, prying herself out of the embrace. Aiko checked her reflection in the window of the podship and flinched. The paneling from the top of her throat to her sternum was flayed open to give Cinder access to her internal workings. Her central processor, wiring, and mobility mechanics were on full display.
Oh, yuck,
said Aiko, trying to cover the hole with both hands.
I hate when my wiring is showing.
I know the feeling. Cinder pulled a pair of pliers off the wall's magnetic strip. Come here. I'll see if I can bend some of that external paneling back into place. A lot of your skin fibers are beyond repair, so it's not going to be perfect, but it's all I can do right now. You might have to wear turtlenecks for a while. Sighing, Aiko came to stand beside Cinder.
Figures that as soon as Captain Thorne brings home this marvelous body for me, those stupid lunars go and ruin everything.
Cinder smirked. Stop talking for a minute while I do this. Aiko impatiently tapped her fingers against her hips while Cinder warped the external paneling into something that resembled the shape of a clavicle. Behind her, the door hummed open.
Here she is, Your Majesty.
Cinder stiffened, the pliers still clamped onto Aiko's paneling. She heard footsteps, and then Aiko screeched and shoved Cinder and her tool away.
Don't let him see me this way,
she yelled, diving behind the podship. Gulping, Cinder tucked the pliers into her back pocket and slowly turned around. Kai's gaze was dark as it swooped over her to the podship and Aiko's legs beneath it, to the tool chests and power cords fastened to the walls, before landing on Cinder again. Crescenthorn hovered curiously by the door.
You're awake, she stammered. Then,
Realizing that was a stupid thing to say, she attempted to stand straighter. How do you feel? Kidnapped? How should I feel? She rubbed her wrist, tempted to call up a glamour to disguise her cyborg hand, which was also stupid, of course. And, besides, it was something Lavanna would have done. I was hoping you'd feel well-rested, she said, attempting a weak smile. She was met with no reaction. No smile, no chuckle, not even a flicker of humor. She pressed her lips together. We need to talk, said Kai. Thorn let out a slow whistle.
No one ever likes to hear those words.
Cinder glared at him.
Thorn, why don't you go give Iko a tutorial with the cockpit controls?
Excellent idea, Crest chirped, nudging Thorn back out the door. Come on, Iko.
Iko was still hiding, hugging herself self-consciously.
Is he looking?
Kai raised an eyebrow.
He's not looking, said Cinder.
A hesitation.
Are you sure?
Cinder gestured exasperatedly at Kai. You're not looking. He cast his eyes to the ceiling.
Oh, for all the stars.
Crossing his arms, he turned his back on them. Cinder waved at Iko.
All clear. We'll finish that up later.
Braids bouncing, Iko darted to join Cress and Thorn in the hallway.
I'm so happy to see you're all right, Your Majesty,
she called to his back. As the door slipped shut, Iko flashed Cinder an encouraging thumbs up. And then they were alone. Chapter 60.
I can't believe you kidnapped me, Kai yelled, spinning back to face her before Cinder could brace herself. We're on a spaceship, Cinder. In space.
He pointed at the wall. It wasn't actually an exterior wall, but Cinder didn't feel the need to point that out.
I can't be on a spaceship. I have a country to run. I have people who need me. We are on the verge of a war. Do you understand that? War, where people die. I cannot be up here messing around with you and your band of misfits. Do you even know that you're housing one of her mutants up there?
Oh, yeah, that's Wolf. He's harmless. She rolled her eyes. Well, not harmless. He laughed, but it was sharp and delirious.
I can't. How could. What were you thinking?
You're welcome, she muttered, defiantly crossing her arms. He glowered, rather ungratefully.
Take me back to Earth.
I can't do that.
Cinder,
he huffed, reconsidered, softened, just a bit. The change put an instant dent in Cinder's defenses, prompting a strange tingle behind her ribcage. She dug her fingertips into her elbows.
As someone who understands why you did this and admires your ability to actually accomplish it, I am pleading with you. Cinder, please take me back.
She filled up her lungs.
No.
The softness was gone, instantly. Tipping his head back, Kai strung both his hands through his hair. It surprised her how familiar the gesture was.
When did you become so frustrating?
She scuffed the toe of her boot against the floor.
Fine. As your emperor, I command you to return me to Earth immediately.
Cinder rocked on her heels.
Kai, Your Majesty, you may recall that I'm lunar, and lunars are forbidden from being granted citizenship in the Eastern Commonwealth. Therefore,
you're no longer my emperor.
This isn't a joke.
She was surprised at how the words stung. Like before, in the palace, indignation reared up fast and burning.
You have no idea how seriously I'm taking this. Are you? Do you even know what the consequences are going to be for what you've done?
Yes, actually, I know this is a war. I'm aware that more people are going to die before this is over. But we didn't have a choice.
Your choice was to stay out of the way. Your choice was to do nothing. This is my job, my responsibility. I'm the emperor. Let me handle it.
By letting you marry her? That's handling it.
It's my decision. It's a stupid one.
Kai spun away, his hands clawed into his hair.
Whatever product had been used to style it for the wedding was making it messier than usual. And stars, he looked good. Cinder smothered the thought, annoyed with herself.
Please, he said, his voice strained as he faced her again. Please tell me this isn't some petty act of jealousy. Please tell me this isn't all because I asked you to the ball, or that time in the elevator, or... Oh, you can't be serious. I hope you don't really think so little of me. You shot me, Cinder, and then you kidnapped me. I honestly don't know what to think. Well, believe it or not, we didn't just do this for you. We're trying to save the whole world from your power-crazy fiancé. I refuse to let Lavanna become empress. I refuse to give her free reign over the Commonwealth. But we need more time. More time for what? All you've done is make her angrier, so that when she retaliates, her wrath is going to be that much worse. Was that a part of your master plan, or are you just making this up as you go along? Cinder's blood began to boil, and she desperately, desperately wished she could tell them that, yes, of course, they had a grand master plan that was guaranteed to work, guaranteed to rid them all of Queen Lavanna and her tyranny forever. But there was no guarantee. Only a string of hope and the knowledge that losing wasn't an option. She swallowed hard. I have a plan to end this for good, but I need your help. Kai pinched the bridge of his nose. Cinder, I hate Lavanna as much as you do, but she's the one pulling the strings here. She has this army. It's like nothing I've ever seen before. Those little skirmishes that killed 16,000 people a couple weeks ago? Laughable compared to what she's really capable of. Plus, she has an antidote to letimosis, and we desperately need it. You know how much we need it. So, while the idea of marrying Lavanna and crowning her empress makes me want to gouge out my own eyes, I don't have a choice.
Gouge out your own eyes? She said softly. She could make you do that, you know.
His expression darkened.
So could you, I'm told.
She looked away.
Kai,
Your Majesty. He waved his arms through the air.
Kai is fine. I don't care.
Cinder pressed her lips. It felt like a victory, but an unearned one.
You have to trust me. We can defeat her. I know we can.
How? Even if...
Let's say you did. Let's say you even managed to kill her. There's still a whole posse of thaumaturges ready to take her place, and from what I've seen, they're not much better.
We'll choose the person to replace her.
We already have her replacement, actually. He snickered.
Ah, I see. Because you think the lunar people will bow to just any...
one. He trailed off, eyes widening, and for a moment his anger was gone. Unless...
Wait. You don't mean...
She looked at the floor. He took a single step toward her.
Did you find her? Princess Celine? Is that what this is all about?
Cinder took the pliers out of her pocket, needing something to fiddle with while her nerves sparked and sputtered. She remembered that her metal hand was still bare, but Kai hadn't glanced at it once through the whole argument.
Cinder!
Yeah, she breathed. Yeah, I found her. Kai pointed toward the cargo bay.
Is it that blonde girl?
She shook her head, and Kai frowned.
The girl from France? What was her name? Scarlet something?
No, not Scarlet. She squeezed the pliers, trying to direct all her frazzled energy into them.
Then where is she? Is she on this ship? Can I meet her, or is she still on Earth somewhere? Is she hiding?
When Cinder said nothing, Kai frowned.
What's wrong? Is she all right?
I have to ask you something, and I want you to be honest.
His eyes narrowed, instantly suspicious, which bothered her more than she cared to admit. She loosened her grip on the pliers.
Do you really think I brainwashed you before, when we met?
And all those times before the ball? His shoulders drooped.
Really? You're changing the subject to talk about this?
It's important to me,
She turned away and started gathering the tools she'd used to fix Aiko. I understand if you do. I know how it must have looked. Kai fidgeted with his ceremonial sash, then, after a moment, pulled it over his head and bunched it up in his fists.
I don't know.
I never wanted to believe it, but I've had to wonder. And when you fell and I saw your glamour? Cinder, do you have any idea how beautiful your glamour is? Cinder cringed, knowing that he didn't mean it as a compliment. Painful to look at were the words he'd used at the time.
No,
she said, distracting herself by returning each tool to its designated place on the magnetic wall.
I can't see it.
Well, it was a lot to take in that night. But then, Lavanna has manipulated me plenty of times, so I know what it feels like, and it never felt like that with you. She released the last tool.
Of course, the media wants to think that's what happened. It would be convenient.
Right, she glanced at him over her shoulder. A convenient excuse for inviting a cyborg to the ball. He blinked. For inviting a lunar to the ball. The knot that had been tied up in her stomach for weeks began to unravel, just a little. Not that it makes a difference what I say, but I never did. Manipulate you, I mean. And I never will. She hesitated. It was a promise that she didn't know if she'd be able to keep. Not if he didn't agree to help them. And I did try to tell you about being cyborg. I mean, kind of. I'm sure I considered it at least twice. Kai started to shake his head and she held her breath.
No, you were right. If you'd told me, I probably never would have spoken to you again.
He stared down at the sash twisted between his fists. Although, I like to think I would act differently now. He met her gaze and she noticed, with a start, that his ears had gone pink. And then his lips quirked into the faintest of smiles. It was the smile she'd been waiting for. It didn't last long. Cinder, look, I'm glad I'm not married right now, but this was still a huge mistake. I can't risk angering Lavanna. Whatever you're planning, you have to leave me out of it. I can't. I need your help. He sighed, but it was shaky, and she could tell his resolve was crumbling. You think Celine can overthrow her? Biting the inside of her cheek, she nodded. I do. Then I hope she intends to do it soon. Dragging her hands down her sides, Cinder felt nervousness pressing against her ribcage. Kai, she may not be exactly what you were hoping for. I don't want you to be disappointed. I know you put a lot into trying to find her and...
Why? What's wrong with her?
Cringing, she knotted her fingers together. Metal and skin. Well, she was rescued from that fire, but it destroyed a lot of her body. She lost some limbs, and a lot of her skin had to be grafted, and she's just not entirely whole. He furrowed his brow.
What do you mean? Is she in a coma?
Not anymore. She braced herself for his reaction. But she's a cyborg. His eyes widened, but then his attention was darting around the room as if he couldn't look at Cinder while he adjusted to that information.
I see, he said slowly before meeting her gaze again. But is she all right?
The question caught her by surprise and she couldn't help a startled laugh.
Oh, yeah, she's great. I mean, half the people in the world want to kill her and the other half want to chain her to a throne on the moon, which is just what she's always wanted. So she's fantastic.
He stared at her like he was once again questioning her sanity.
What?
Cinder shut her eyes and tried to bury her mounting panic. Opening them again, she spread her hands, placating, hesitated. She looked at the ceiling, took in a breath, met his gaze again. It's me, Kai. I'm Princess Celine. Chapter 61. Kai's face was made up of confusion, like she'd spoken gibberish. His wedding sash slipped out of his hands and drifted to the floor. When the silence slipped toward awkward, Cinder cleared her throat. "And in case you weren't sure, I was being sarcastic before about all that great stuff. Not that, I mean, I know you have your own things to worry about, so you don't need to, I'm fine, really. It's just been a rough few weeks with the whole," she circled her hands wildly through the air, "peony ball Lavanna wedding thing, and now Dr. Erland is dead, and Scarlet is gone, and Thorn is blind, and Wolf, I'm not sure. He's so still these days, and I'm really starting to worry about him, but I've got it under control. I can do this. Stop. Please, stop talking." She clamped her mouth shut. The silence dragged on. Cinder opened her mouth, but Kai held up his hand. She shut it again, bit her lip. "You?" he finally said. "You are Princess Celine?" Grimacing, she rubbed at her wrist. "Surprise?" "All this time?" She ducked her head, suddenly uncomfortable at the way he was looking at her. Yeah, technically. Dr. Erland figured it out first when I was taken in for the cyborg draft. He ran my DNA and... yeah. But he decided not to tell me until I was locked up in prison, which complicated a few things. Kai guffawed, but not in a mean way. Inhaling a shaky breath, he rubbed the palms of his hands into his eyes. Then, as quickly as his disbelief had come, the comprehension came faster. "Oh, stars. Lavanna knows, doesn't she? That's why she hates you so much. That's why she's so determined to find you." "Yeah, she knows. And it was you. This whole time, it was you." "You're actually taking this better than I thought you would." He dragged both hands down his face. "No, you know, it almost makes sense. Kinda." He scraped his gaze over her. "Although, somehow I always pictured the princess, I don't know, in a dress." Cinder laughed. "And I always thought that when I found her, it would be so easy. We would just present her to the world and announce her as the true queen, and Lavanna would crawl away to some hole. I never imagined that Lavanna would already know, that she would be fighting it." She quirked an eyebrow. "I'm beginning to think you may not know your fiancé very well." He scowled at her. "That's it, Cinder. No more secrets. I don't know if I can survive any more big reveals from you. So, if you have anything else to tell me, out with it. Right now." Cinder rocked back on her heels, pondering. Cyborg. Lunar. Princess. No more secrets. No more lies. Well, just one. She thought she might be a tiny bit in love with him, but there was no way she could tell him that. "I can't cry," she whispered instead, hunching her shoulders. Kai blinked twice, then scratched his ear and looked away. "I already knew that." "What? How?" "Your guardian may have said something about it, and I've seen your medical records." "My," her eyes widened. "You've seen, you know?" "You were a fugitive, and I needed to know more about you, and I'm sorry." She squeezed her eyes shut. She'd seen the diagram of her cyborg implants. Every wire, every synthetic organ, every manufactured panel. Thinking about it made her feel nauseous. She couldn't imagine what someone else would think when they saw it. What Kai must have thought. "No, it's all right," she said. "No more secrets." He took a step toward her. "Your eyes, are they really?" "Synthetic," she murmured, when he couldn't say the word himself. "And that's why you can't cry?" She nodded, unable to look up at him, even as he came to stand not two steps in front of her. "I don't need the tear ducts for lubrication, and they were getting in the way of, she tapped a finger against her temple. "I have a retina scanner and display in my eye. It's like a really small net screen, so there's a lot of wiring. Oh, stars, I can't believe I'm telling you this. She buried her face in her hands. It's kind of brilliant, said Kai. She nearly choked on her own laugh. Kai reached for her wrists. Can I see? She groaned, knowing that if she had the ability to blush, her face would be as red as his wedding sash. Mortified and resigned, she let him pull her hands away and struggled to hold his gaze. He stared into her eyes like he could see through to her control panel, but then, after a moment, he shook his head.
You'd never even know.
Trying not to fidget, Cinder raised her eyes to the ceiling, hating herself a little bit for what she was about to do. But what did it matter now? He would never again be fooled into thinking she was human.
Watch the bottom of my left iris, she whispered.
She turned on the retina display, pulling up a news feed she'd been watching before they got to New Beijing. News from the African Union. An anchor was talking, but Cinder didn't bother to turn on the audio. Kai dipped his head. It took a moment, but then his lips parted.
Is that?
Newsfeed.
It's so small. Just a dot, really.
It looks a lot bigger to me. A tingle traipsed down her spine at how he was studying her, almost in childish awe, and how he was so close, and how he was still holding her wrists. He seemed to realize it at the same time. His expression changed suddenly, and she knew he wasn't looking at the retina display anymore, or even her synthetic eyes. He was looking at her. Her heart pattered. Kai licked his lips.
I'm sorry I had you arrested, but I'm glad you're all right.
Really? You don't hate me for shooting you? His lips twitched and he glanced down. Taking her cyborg hand into both of his, he lifted it between them, eyeing the metal fingers.
I don't remember that medical diagram saying anything about a gun. My security team probably would have found that to be useful information.
I like to maintain an air of mystery.
I've noticed.
She watched his thumb trace the length of her fingers, finding it hard to breathe, impossible to move.
The hand is new, she whispered. It appears to be excellent craftsmanship.
His voice, too, had dropped. It's plated with 100% titanium.
She didn't know why she said it. Hardly knew what she'd said at all.
Bending his head, Kai pressed his lips to her knuckles. The plating had no nerve endings, and yet the touch sent a tingle of electricity along her arm.
Cinder?
He lifted his gaze.
Just to be clear, you're not using your mind powers on me right now, are you?
She blinked.
Of course not.
Just checking.
Then he slid his arms around her waist and kissed her. Cinder gasped, pressing her palms against his chest. Kai pulled her closer. Seconds later, her brain began registering all the new chemicals flooding her system. Increased levels of dopamine and endorphins, reduced amounts of cortisol, erratic pulse, rising blood pressure. Leaning into him, Cinder sent the messages away. Her hands tentatively made their way to his shoulders before stringing around his neck. Then, somewhere in the rush of sensations, Cinder's attention snagged on the retina display, alone against the darkness of her eyelids. At first, it was only a dim, annoyed awareness, but then, Farafra, lunars, massacre. Her eyes snapped open. She pulled herself away. Kai started, "Whoa, I'm sorry." She started to tremble, still focused on the news feed. A moment passed in which she was watching the feed with horror, and then Kai cleared his throat. His voice had gone heavy.
No, no, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have.
No, she grabbed his shirt before he pulled away from her. It's not. It's Lavanna. His expression turned cold. She's retaliated. She attacked. Cursing, she tore her hands away from Kai, covering her face while she digested the news. A swarm of lunar soldiers attacked the oasis town not 2 hours ago, before disappearing into the desert as fast as they'd come. They murdered both the civilians and the Commonwealth soldiers who had been sent to question them. Pictures flashed across the scene. Blood. So much blood. Cinder, where? Where did she strike?
Africa. The town, she gulped. The people that helped us.
Something snapped in her head. Screaming, Cinder reached for the strip of tools, seized a wrench, and threw it at the far wall. It clattered harmlessly to the floor. She grabbed a screwdriver next, but Kai just as quickly lifted it from her hand.
Has she put forth any demands? He said, absurdly calm.
She clenched her empty fists.
I don't know. I just know they're all dead. Because of me. Because they helped me.
She fell into a crouch. Covering her head, her entire body was burning up with fury. At Lavanna, but mostly at herself, at her own decisions. Because she'd known this would happen. She'd made the choice anyway.
Cinder,
this is my fault.
A hand settled on her back.
You didn't kill them.
I might as well have.
Did they know the risk they were taking when they helped you? The danger they'd be in?
She turned her head away from him.
Maybe they did it because they believed in you, because they thought the risk was worth it.
Is this supposed to be helping?
Cinder.
You want to know another secret? The biggest secret?
She sat, splaying her legs like a broken doll in front of her.
I'm scared, Kai. I'm so scared.
She thought it might feel better to say the words out loud, but instead, they only made her feel pathetic and weak. She wrapped her arms around her waist.
I'm scared of her, and her army, and what she can do. And everyone expects me to be strong and brave, but I don't know what I'm doing. I have no idea how to overthrow her. And even if I succeed, I have no idea how to be a queen. There are so many people relying on me. People who don't even know they're relying on me, and now they're dying. All because of some ridiculous fantasy that I can help them, that I can save them. But what if I can't?
A headache began to throb against her temples, a reminder that she would be crying right now, if she were normal. Arms wrapped around her. Cinder pressed her face against his silk shirt. There was some sort of cologne or maybe soap there. So faint she hadn't picked up on it before.
I know exactly how you feel, Kai said.
She squeezed her eyes shut.
Not exactly.
I think pretty close.
She shook her head.
No, you don't understand. More than anything, I'm afraid that the more I fight her and the stronger I become, the more I'm turning into her.
Sitting back on his heels, Kai pulled away just enough to look into her face without releasing her.
You're not turning into Lavanna.
Are you sure about that? Because I manipulated your advisor today, and countless guards. I manipulated Wolf. I killed a police officer in France. And I would have killed more people if I had to. People in your own military, and I don't even know if I would feel bad about it because there are always ways to justify it. It's for the good of everyone, isn't it? Sacrifices have to be made. And then there are the mirrors. Such a stupid, stupid thing, but they... I'm beginning to get it. Why she hates them so much. And then
she shuddered.
Today I tortured her thaumaturge. I didn't just manipulate her. I tortured her, and I almost enjoyed it.
Cinder, look at me.
He cupped her face.
I know you're scared, and you have every right to be, but you are not turning into Queen Lavanna.
You can't know that.
But I do.
She's my aunt, you know.
He smoothed back her hair.
Yeah? Well, my great-grandfather signed the Cyborg Protection Act, and yet, here we are.
She bit her lip. Here they were.
Now, let's never talk about you being related to her again, because I'm technically still engaged to her, and that's really weird.
Cinder couldn't help laughing, even exhaustedly, even just to cover up the screaming inside. As he bound her up in his arms again, her headache began to fade, replaced with the strength of his heartbeat and the way she felt almost delicate when she was pressed up against him like this. Almost fragile. Almost safe. Almost like a princess. "You won't tell anyone, will you?" she murmured. "I won't. And if it turns out I make a terrible princess?" He shrugged against her. "The people of Luna don't need a princess. They need a revolutionary." Cinder furrowed her brow. "A revolutionary," she repeated. She liked that a lot better than princess. The door zipped open. Cinder and Kai jumped apart, Kai scrambling to his feet. Cress, breathless and flushed, paused in the doorway. "I'm sorry," she said, "but the news feeds. Lavanna—" "I know," said Cinder, forcing herself to stand. "I know about Farafra." Cress shook her head, wild-eyed. "It isn't just Farafra. Their ships are swarming Earth, every continent. Thousands of soldiers are invading the cities. Her other soldiers?" She shuddered so hard she had to grasp the doorframe. "They're like animals, like predators." "What is Earth doing?" asked Kai, and Cinder recognized his leader voice. "Are we defending ourselves?"
"They're trying. All six countries have declared a state of war. Evacuations are being ordered. Military is assembling."
"All six?" Cress pushed her hair off her brow.
"Kontoran has temporarily assumed the role of leader of the Commonwealth until your return."
A heavy silence pressed against Cinder's chest. Then Kai turned to face her, and she could feel the gravity of his emotions without looking at him. "I think it's about time you told me about this plan," he said. Cinder curled her hands into tight fists. The possibility of their success had seemed so faint that she'd hardly considered what would come next. She'd hoped they would have some time, at least a day or two. But she saw now that there would be no such respite. War had begun. "You said yourself that the people of Luna need a revolutionary." She lifted her chin, holding his gaze. "So I'm going to Luna, and I'm going to start a revolution."
This is Rebecca Soler. We hope you've enjoyed Cress, a Macmillan audiobook from Fywell and Friends. This program was directed by Maddie Argyropoulos. Text copyright 2014 by Marissa Meyer. Production copyright 2014 by Macmillan Audio. All rights reserved.